The first reading is from the book of Exodus, chapter 3, verses 1 to 15. Moses was taking care of the flock, his father-in-law Jethro, Midian's priest. He led his flock out to the edge of the desert, and he came to God's mountain called Horeb. God's messenger appeared to him in a flame of fire in the middle of a bush. Moses saw that the bush was in flames, but it didn't burn up. Then Moses said to himself, "Let me check out this amazing sight and find out why the bush isn't burning up." When God saw that he was coming to look, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." Moses said, "I'm here." Then the Lord said, "Don't come any closer. Take off your sandals, because you are standing on holy ground." God continued, "I am the God of your father, Abraham's God, Isaac's God, and Jacob's God." Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. Then God said, "I've clearly seen my people oppressed in Egypt. I've heard their cry of injustice because of their slave masters. I know about their pain. I've come down to rescue them from the Egyptians in order to take them out of that land and bring them to a good and broad land, a land that's full of milk and honey, a place where the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites all live. Now the Israelites, cries of injustice have reached me. I've seen just how much the Egyptians have oppressed them. So get going. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I to go to Pharaoh and to bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" God said, "I'll be with you, and this will show you that I'm the one who sent you. After you bring the people out of Egypt, you will come back here and worship God on this mountain." But Moses said to God, "If I now come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' they're going to ask me, 'What's this God's name?' What am I supposed to say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. So say to the Israelites, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God continued, "Say to the Israelites, 'The God of your ancestors, Abraham's God, Isaac's God, and Jacob's God has sent me to you. This is my name forever. This is how all generations will remember me." And the second reading is from the book of Matthew, chapter 16, verses 13 to 24. Now when Jesus came to the area of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the human one is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah, or one of the other prophets." He said, "And what about you? Who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter said, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." Then Jesus replied, "Happy are you, Simon, son of Jonah, because no human has shown this to you. Rather, my Father who is in heaven has shown you. I tell you that you're Peter, and I'll build my church on this rock. The gates of the underworld won't be able to stand against it. I'll give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Anything you fasten on earth will be fastened in heaven. Anything you loosen on earth will be loosened in heaven." Then he ordered the disciples not to tell anybody that he was the Christ. From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he had to go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders, chief priests, and legal experts, and that he had to be killed and raised on the third day. Then Peter took hold of Jesus and, scolding him, began to correct him. "God forbid, Lord, this won't happen to you." But he turned to Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stone that could make me stumble, for you are not thinking God's thoughts, but human thoughts. Then Jesus said to his disciples, all who want to come after me must say no to themselves, take a cross, and follow me.
Thank you. Is playing with me. Okay, now you can hear me. So one of the things that happens in Zoom is one of our leaders, the various folks that help with the technology, become co-hosts. And as you become co-hosts, you have the ability to mute and unmute one another. And I've always warned Marcus that, you know, when he's ever tired of what I have to say, that he can unmute, he can go ahead and mute me. And we were just now playing mute, unmute tag. Thank you, Marcus. I think at this moment, the tag is mine. We'll send it back. So, you know, even as I was just talking with the young people about how all the ground that we stand on is holy ground, and I truly believe that you all know that about myself, that there is really no place that you can stand where the presence of God is not found within that moment. Nevertheless, there are still moments that the biblical narrative lifts up for us, in which there are these, in which stories like Victoria in Exodus and today's story in Matthew are wonderful examples of when, in which the holiness of the moment is in some ways amplified, in which God calls to us at times with a voice that is utterly transformative, utterly restorative, utterly the voice of love that comes from our deepest identification with the wounds of the world to the very bubbling of joy within the multitude of ourselves. But hearing that voice of God's is not something that we were always that. It reminds me of those of you that remember radio dials, that when you would get into the car and you would have your car radio, and in order to get from one station to the next, you actually had to spin a dial to go from left to right or right to left. And sometimes when we were working that radio dial, we spun it so fast that we would pass one station after another, hardly noticing because we were so intent on getting to the one station that we want. There are other times where we were perhaps not exactly certain what we wanted, and so we would spin it a bit more slowly. And we could hear stations emerge out of the crackle of sound as it went from one frequency to another. But oftentimes, again, even though we're spinning it slowly, those stations would not fully emerge. We would just hear a bleep or a blip and then move on. But every now and then, we would slow down enough the spinning of the radio dial so that we could hit that precise spot where the frequency was exactly perfect of some obscure station, and we might be utterly and totally unexpected. The voice of God in our lives can be like that very mysterious station that we work and we struggle to attune ourselves, that is easily passed by in the rush and the hecticness of our days. But if we are able to give ourselves time to pay attention, every now and then, when we spin the dial, when we center ourselves as deep as we can, we hear something so unexpected that we are so intrigued enough that we keep searching for it again. And I think that this is probably what is happening to Moses. I do not believe for a minute that this moment where Moses is confronted by a burning bush that would not be consumed and hears the voice of God, that this is the very first time that God has called to him. I do not believe that. I remember the stories of young Moses that happened in the chapters. Soon with writing the injustices of the world, when he sees one of his fellow Hebrews who is a slave being, Moses takes that injustice into his own hands to avenge that beating that is going on. Clearly the spinning dial that is Moses's attuning to the voice of God has at times at least found his way to that voice of God that comes through that radio that is our spirit and our soul in a way that calls for justice, quite different than the Empire's top hit station that he might well have been listening to most of the time. That very moment in which he heard that voice of justice and had to avenge the injustice that was happening became the moment in which he knew he had to flee from out of Egypt. For he knew that one who is held on justice is like a fox in the hen house to the empire. it is a fox that must be eliminated. And so Moses, so he would not be eliminated, flees away. And I suspect that in his new life now as a shepherd in the land of Midian, he had lots of time for pondering and marveling and musing. That's one of the gifts of being a shepherd, that as you go from pasture to pasture, from hillside to hillside, there is much time to muse and listen and ponder and turn that radio dial to try and attune to the voice of God. I suspect that for more than once, he had one of those fleeting insights that many of us have when we least expect it, when it's as if we are able to pull back the veil and glimpse something greater before it is gone and we can fully locate it again. I suspect that is exactly what Peter's experience was about 1,500 years later as well. Peter has spent all of these days with Jesus. He has seen in the very presence of Jesus a new way to be, a new calling, a new interpretation, a new understanding, and he is living into this. And yet he is still a person that is clouded, as we all are, by the cultural norms and stories of his past. And so he can only grasp that new way to be in moments and glimpsed moments of clarity. So when Jesus says, "Who do you say that I am?" Peter has that clarified moment. And he says, you are the Messiah. Jesus looks at him and realizes that Peter, for that one moment, has tuned the dial to exactly the right place, has heard the message. And so Jesus takes it one step further and says, "You are right, Peter. But you also need to know this, that the Messiah, the one you are calling the Messiah, is going to go to Jerusalem soon and is going to die, is going to be killed." And at that point, all of those cultural norms, all of that history that says to Peter that the Messiah must be a warrior, conqueror, king, not a servant that will die, comes rushing back in, and the dial spins away from that moment of clarity that he just had. And Peter falls back into trying to understand again, what is this that is in front of him? But we do know this about Peter. Eventually, Peter is going to lock in fully on that station of God's love. Lock in fully on God's presence that is transformative. Lock in fully on that presence that is restorative. Lock in fully on that love. From the time that he enters into that empty tomb and sees that indeed it is empty, from that point on, this will be the station that plays the playlist of his life. And so too for Moses. For in this moment there, as a shepherd in the wilderness, in the wilds of Midian, he sees a burning bush that will be consumed, and he chooses at that moment to not turn away. Who knows how many times before God may have presented a burning bush that would not be consumed, and Moses chose then to turn away, chose then to let the radio dial spin. But in this moment, he chooses to not turn away and attune his presence to that which is there. And he turns to the burning bush, cocks his ear, hears God call his name. And the moment that Moses says those fateful words, he says, "Here I am." He is at that moment locked on to that station that will play in his soul for the rest of his life. And he hears the voice of God, the voice that he will embrace as his own. And he said, hears God say, I have heard my people's pain, and I shall act. I shall deliver them. Theirs will now be the journey that will go from slavery to liberation. And though we know that Moses will waver, in the very next verses, Moses begins to waver. At times, he can't quite keep the station in tune. He says to God, "Who am I to do this? No one's going to believe me." Later on, he says, I stutter. No one's going to listen to me. Excuse after excuse, and God bats each excuse away until finally Moses gets focused and completely on that call. And he will take up that call that God has ushered to him. He will go to Pharaoh, will lead the people. He will endure 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. He will even to the promised land, though he will not enter into it. And Peter, 1,500 years later, will do the same. He will emerge from that empty tomb on fire with new life. He will stand before a crowd at Pentecost, and the Holy Spirit will descend and spring forth for him. He will help to form the earliest communities of what becomes known as the way. He will embrace a new way of being, step beyond the bounds of culture. He will challenge the kosher laws that ruled the cultural norms of his day. He will challenge the ways of separation and hierarchy that ruled not only in his people, but in all of the Roman Empire. And he will embrace a new life that is possible for all. Liberation from the tyranny, not just of Rome, but of a constricted worldview that could not fully at that point embrace the fullness of God's presence throughout the world. And 1,200 years later, we begin to hear this story emerge again in the person of St. Francis. St. Francis will tune into that very same station that Moses and Peter tuned into. From the moment that he eventually himself naked in the town square and gives over his life to love and gives over his life to rebuilding the church, both literally brick by brick in the church of San Damiano and figuratively in the whole church of Christ at that time, he will embrace that love of God, a love of God that he will help us to understand when God says to love our neighbors, that our neighborhood is as big as the entirety of the creation. And even centuries later, after St. Francis, here in our own country, we will see a person by the name of Martin Luther King tune into that very station. We'll call a nation to cast aside its sin of racism. We'll call a nation to make a reality out of a dream of equality and justice for all. And right here in Hawaii, I believe that's that very same station, that very same station that Moses tuned into, that Peter tuned into, that St. Francis, Martin Luther King, is the very same station that would not be consumed of God's love, that would not be consumed, that spoke to young people like Elsie and Esther Ho, Ayin Lum Tom, Adelaide Ishikawa Kimura, David Makaoi, Shirley Akiyoshi, and Bernice Mihara Young. When those young people decided in 1923 that it was time for Hawaii to have an intentionally inter-ethnic church, one that would embody the vision of Paul's, where in Christ there is no east or west, no north or south, no slave nor free, no male or female. That was the voice of God speaking as if it was from a burning bush that would not be consumed, that helped them to understand that they were being called to something bigger and larger than the moment. And the amazing thing that happens is that when that station is found, when we tune into that place where God is calling to us, it no longer is the property of the one person who is tuned in. It becomes contagious. Look at the story of Moses that will emerge from here. Moses tunes in, and because he tunes in, his sister Miriam, his brother Aaron, they too are able to access that station in ways easier than ever before. And so too the people of Israel that had been slaves, and they too will tune in. And though they will struggle for 40 years to get it, eventually there will be Joshua who will rise amongst them. There will be the judges who will rise soon after that. There will be those who get it and will continue to push forward that vision. Peter tunes in right after Mary has tuned in. And Peter and Mary have understood that very presence of God that is found now in the living Christ. They are able to lead the other apostles to that very same truth. And all of those other apostles will bring in others, and they will become the founders of the beloved community that we are ancestors of, that we are the inheritors of. Francis tunes in, and as he tunes, so does Claire. And to those who would follow them, the orders of St. Francis, the order of the Poor Clares, all of those folks begin to understand in ways that they could not have had their founders not first heard it. And think right here in our own midst, think of Crossroads. Think of how those voices that began this church found their expression in so many others. Think of the image, the picture that we have of 1969 with Julia standing in the doorway of the sanctuary doing her imitation of Gandalf to the FBI who want to come in and arrest those who are in sanctuary inside and saying, "You shall not pass." Think of Chuck Burrows and his uncompromising call to a gospel that includes the full care of all of God's creation. the young people that he has inspired as a teacher and as one who is a leader in the community, the places that exist now once again, Kawainui, Ulupo Heiau, because he tuned in and brought others in. Think of those who took up the challenge of Father Claude Dutille of about 40 years ago of weekly making meals for those without houses. The next Saturday, if we are not able to deliver meals, will be the first Saturday in a 40-year stretch, I believe, that we will not at Church of the Crossroads have delivered meals to IHS for those who are without home. 25 of those years were led by Mary Reese, and right now we are capably led by Becca, leading us into this continued ministry that has gone on for now two generations. Think of the voices that spoke for the early child that sprung forth from this church, who pioneered early childhood education from a very progressive standpoint that is now embodied at the early school, our tenant here at the church, but that was started by Gene Kaufman and others at Hale Mohala Preschool right there at the church. Once the voice of God is tuned in by some, it becomes contagious. Indeed, when the call is heard, the listening of one can easily become the listening of the many. I think of Martin Luther King again, and think of who was able to hear the voice of God more clearly because there were others who preceded him, whose shoulders he stood upon. Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman, Fannie Lou Hamer, W.E. Du Bois, where would we be as a nation without these voices? And with each subsequent generation, because of the clarity of the reception of God's call, it becomes clearer and clearer to those who follow. Think of the voices that are now a part of our community right now. The most trusted voice in the entire world is probably that of Michelle Obama. We are gifted with authors that are emerging right now. Ta-Nehisi Coates, Ibram X. Kendi, Isabel Wilkerson, Michelle Alexander, that are shifting the way in which we understand the world in which we live. We are being exposed to emerging politicians that are sharing a new way or reclaiming the way that we are called to be. Voices that we are just beginning to hear, like Keisha Lance Bottoms, the mayor of Atlanta, or Muriel Bowser, the mayor of Washington, D.C., who had the courage to paint Black Lives Matter and declare the road, that part of Pennsylvania Avenue that runs in front of the White House as Black Lives Matter Plaza. Think of the fact that we have so many entertainers now who are using the very platform that their popularity gives them to speak for issues much in themselves. A person like Beyonce, who when she speaks, has a voice that is almost unparalleled. Or Chadwick Boseman, who we just lost just yesterday, after a four-year-long battle with colon cancer, who said, fearlessness means taking the first step, even if you don't know where it will take you. It means being driven by a higher purpose. It means knowing that you reveal your character when you stand apart, more than when you stand with the crowd. We have throughout our community right now voices that are rising together. And I would like to suggest that perhaps we are on the very brink of a nation tuning into that very same station that Moses was attuned to, standing in front of a bush that would not be consumed. For today, so many are turning the dial to hear that voice that is calling to justice, that is calling to love, that is calling to a different way of being. A country that is perhaps finally ready to address systemic racism. A nation perhaps readying itself to truly embrace not just the reality of a living wage for all, but a reality of lives that are given the right to be utterly whole and filled with imagination and inspiration. And we know that even as there are those that are tuning into that voice of God that is calling to us, there are many others who want to keep that dial spinning away, or would like to eradicate that dial completely so that we cannot hear the stations of justice and love for all. We are not a world without pharaohs. We are not a world without those who benefit from the enslavement and subjugation of others. We are a world that is exploitive of the resources of the planet. We are a world that is just as exploitive of the resources of the people, the pharaohs of the world. The powers that be that have always made up the citizens of the empire will not just step aside. Moses knew this. Peter, Paul, Mary, they knew this. St. Francis, Claire, St. Claire, they knew this. Sojourner Truth, Martin Luther King, they knew this. The people in our streets today, they know this. But ultimately, what we also know, what Moses knew, what Peter knew, what all those who went before knew, is that the power of those who would oppose the voice of love, the voice of peace, the voice of justice, it is a power that is only temporal. It is never strong enough to stand up to those who would say, as Moses did 3,500 years ago, here I am. What station? What station will we tune to? What station will we allow ourselves to hear? How shall we go into ourselves in prayer and contemplation and center ourselves so that we can indeed take a moment, take the time to turn aside and hear the voice of God calling to us, hear the voice of God calling us into this world and be able to say, here I am. Amen. Eternal Spirit, Earth Maker, Pain Bearer, Life Giver, Source of what is and that shall be, Father and Mother of us all, loving God in whom is heaven. The hallowing of your name echo through the universe, the way of your justice be followed by the peoples of the world. Your heavenly will be done by all created beings. Your commonwealth of peace and freedom sustain our hope and come on earth. With the bread we need for today, feed us. For the hurts we cause others, forgive us. To forgive those, empower us. Times of temptation and test strengthen us. From trial too great to endure, spare us. From the grip of all that is evil, free us. For you reign in the glory of the power that is love, now and forever. Amen.